background of what I do, I've been in law enforcement for 10, almost 11 years. I spent some time, 4 years as a patrol officer, then the last six and a half years as a detective in investigations. I investigated property crimes for a little while, and now I'm working in crimes against persons. So I deal with a lot of crimes that affect our youth, our juveniles, from runaways to theft to robberies to assaults. I mean, you name it, they're involved in it. And so a lot of what I see, the underlying factor in all those crimes, is drug abuse. And so what are we seeing in our school systems? What are we seeing in our youth, that our youth are using today? And hopefully that's what I'll talk to you about for about 15 minutes. Just to get some background here, how many parents have kids in public school? How many parents have kids in private school? How many parents have kids that are homeschooled? Am I missing any schools? Okay, so the vast majority are in public school. It doesn't really matter what schools your kids are attending, they're gonna be exposed to it at some point in time in their life. This is just from the Texas Department of State Health Services. They do a survey every 2 years of public schools and the different types of drugs that kids are using. This is specifically for grades 7 through 12. Alcohol continues to be the most commonly used used by teens by far. That's the number one thing we see kids using today is alcohol. And it says here 58% in 2012 were reporting that they at least used it once in their lifetime. They do their stats a little differently. They ask them how many times in your lifetime have you done it, and then how many times in the past month have you done it. So you'll see it reported in different ways. Marijuana remained the most widely used illegal drug. Marijuana is by far the number one drug that the kids are using. So that combination of marijuana and alcohol is by far what we're seeing kids using today. Ecstasy decreased a little bit from 2010 to 2012, but we see them using ecstasy. MDMA is the normal name for it. But, and then prescription drug abuse is huge. I mean, hydrocodone, Oxycontin, Lortab, Percocet, whatever it is, they can get their hands on. Prescription drug abuse is huge too. So in the public school system, they're going to get exposed to it at some point in time. Private school and homeschools, you got kids who have friends, you know, they're going to be hanging out at some point in time, they're going to talk to them, they're going to get exposed to them at some point in time. Alcohol abuse, primarily, we see it in the school system, but primarily where we see it is at juvenile parties. Kids go to a house, have a party, and they're accessing mom and dad's alcohol at the house. And it usually ends up with us showing up and issuing citations for minor consumption or taking them to jail for DUI if they left the scene and we stop them on traffic. Turning them over to mom and dad with a citation doesn't do much for them. I think, oh, I got a ticket. I'll pay the ticket, or mom and dad pay the ticket, and I'll be fine. So let's go to the next party. From a law enforcement perspective, alcohol abuse, there's not a whole lot that we can do with it. MAVE is what we have to rely on to help with those types of issues, because all we can do is hand them a ticket. Doesn't do much for them. The types of depressants that we're seeing used, like I said, alcohol, marijuana, Xanax, they call it bars, four bars, the prescription drug abuse, hydrocodone, Oxycontin, and heroin. When they can't, the prescription drug abuse costs a lot of money for them. You pay 10 to 15 bucks per pill, one time hit, it's expensive. Heroin's much cheaper and the effects of heroin last a lot longer. And so it's becoming more and more prevalent in the past couple of years. What I really want to talk to you about is the common denominator that we see with these kids that are involved in drugs and alcohol is the parents aren't engaged. Either they're single family or single parent families whose mom or dad are working all the time and they're left with a bunch of free time to hang out with their friends and to get involved in these types of activities. Or they have both parents, but they just aren't engaged in their lives for whatever reason. Work, whatever the reason is. And so they're left to do these things on their own, to deal with the things they're dealing with on their own. And their friends have said, well, I'm doing this, so try this, it'll help you. So they'll start with alcohol, they'll get into marijuana, and it progressively gets worse. And so, like I said, the common denominator that we're seeing with these kids that are using these types of drugs and alcohol are their parents aren't engaged. So I would encourage you, the state of Texas recognizes your authority as a parent and encourages you and tells you you have a duty to parent your child. What does that look like? It's different for every parent, but be engaged in your child's lives. Sit and talk to them. And when you're sitting and talking to them, observe them. Are they showing any of these signs? Are they showing a lack of concentration? Are they showing slurred speech? Are they coming home smelling differently? For those of you that never smell marijuana, the best way I can describe it is smell like a skunk. If they come home smelling like a skunk, ask them, where have you been? What have you been doing? We stopped these three kids. One afternoon, they were back in the Greenbelt Park, and it was like Cheech and Chong, and smoke was just coming out of their car. And, of course, they were smoking marijuana and called their parents and wrote them tickets, and their parents came over, and their parents were so surprised that their children were in a car smoking marijuana. And when you looked into the car, you could see the shake or the marijuana seeds or all over the car. And I said, when was the last time you rode with your child in that car? Like, I don't know. So we took him over to the car and said, this is marijuana. That's a marijuana seed. Smell this smell. It smells like a skunk in here. And just take a ride with your child. Say, let's go have lunch. Get in their car. Let them drive. And look around in their car. What's in their car? What type of music are they listening to? Just observe the signs. And you'll see that they're involved in some of this stuff. The biggest thing that we're seeing right now among the juveniles that we're dealing with is cheese heroin. It's black tar heroin cut with some sort of sleep aid, primarily Nidol or Tylenol PM, and it turns into this yellowish powdery substance, and they can make that last for a long time. It's a lot cheaper than the prescription depressants, narcotics. It's, like I said, it lasts a lot longer. But what you've got to be careful with is a lot of people are cutting this black tar heroin with Xanax, and it'll overdose you like that. And so we're seeing some of the effects of overdose and the effects of cheese heroin in some of the kids that we're dealing with. Some of the stimulants that we're seeing, the ADHD drugs, you'd be surprised they pass those things around like candy. The Ritalin, the Adderall, this gives you the same effect as a stimulant. Keeps them up for studying. Keeps them going. They're passing that around like candy. Ecstasy, cocaine, and methamphetamine we've seen as well. Some of the signs of stimulant use. When you're talking to your kids, are they showing rapid rambling speech? Are they just talking nonstop? Are they staying up for hours on end? You tell them to go to bed, and they won't go to bed till 3 or 4 in the morning. Are you seeing some of this when you're talking to your kids? Just be observant. Street names. How many of you pay for your child's cell phone? Does it have cell phones? Do you check their text messages? Yeah. Take a look at what they're typing to their friends. You'll see some of these references when they're trying to get more of what they need. The ecstasy, the love pill, cocaine, coke, dust, oxycodone, oxy, perks, marijuana, the different names for marijuana. If you see something in those text messages that you don't recognize, look it up. Or ask them, what's this? Of course, they probably won't come out and tell you, but the internet is a wealth of knowledge, and you can find whatever I'm telling you. You can put one of these street names for any of these drugs, and it'll come up with that name for whatever it's referring to. Biggest thing we're seeing right now is what's termed Molly. It's MDMA or ecstasy. It's actually a pure form of MDMA because ecstasy has a bunch of adulterants in it when it's pressed into pills. So this is actually the pure form of MDMA, and they like to call it Molly. It comes in the form of tablets or powder, which users can swallow, snort, or inject. And it's extremely popular because a lot of the hip-hop songs and a lot of the hip-hop artists are referring to it in their songs. I don't know if you listen to what your kids... How many people know what songs are on their kids' iPods? Do you listen to the lyrics of those songs? Because if you don't, you'll be surprised. Any of your kids listen to Rihanna? She talks about Molly in her songs. You can see as we moonshine in Molly. Wycliffe, I see Molly's the new cocaine. Kanye West, something about Mary, she goes off to that Molly. Miley Cyrus, we don't like to party dancing with Molly. If you're reading that, you're not going to think they're talking about the pill Molly. You're going to think they're talking about, you know, someone named Molly. But if you see this coming up again and again in their conversations, look it up. What's Molly? What's Molly the name of it? And you'll see on the internet that this type of stuff will refer to those drugs. How many of you go into your kids' rooms? How many of you look through your kids' stuff? Good. I'm encouraged by that. Because if you come across this kind of stuff, you might want to start asking questions. And they don't keep it scattered around, okay? It's like a treasure to them when they're using. They want to know where it is, and they want to know it's there all the time. And so this bottom left picture you see, it's usually in some sort of box or bag, or it's going to be all together. But for marijuana use, you're going to see the pipes, you're going to see the roach clips, you're going to see cigar wrappers, you're going to see, like I said, the marijuana shape, the seeds, the leaves, as they roll it up, they'll break off, and you'll see evidence of that. You'll see scales. They want to make sure they're getting the right amount of what they're buying, so they measure it to make sure they aren't getting ripped off. For the cheese heroin use, you'll see the credit cards, the straws that are cut. They have to have some way of snorting it. It's primarily snorted. You'll see the straws that are cut. You'll see the dollar bills that are rolled up. You'll see the credit cards with residue on the sides of it. And then a lot of it comes in baggies, different types of baggies. And they like to decorate their baggies. So if you see small baggies, number one, ask the question, what's this baggie for? Number two, if it's decorated, you know it's probably going to be some sort of drug or narcotic. They like to hide their pipes. You can see these highlighters have been fashioned. The bottoms of them pull out, and you can actually use them as a marijuana pipe. We see deodorant containers with the bottoms that screw off, and it's just an empty deodorant container. You can throw your drugs up in that, screw the bottom of it, and just leave it sitting out in your room. You never know that it's nothing, that's anything other than a deodorant container. Coke cans, if you haven't had the experience of going into a head shop where they sell these pipes and these different things, just go walk into one day. Just look around, and you'll see the different things that kids are buying to keep their drugs concealed. It's amazing. In their cars, they pull up the center consoles. Under the center console is a huge boy. Make stuff, whatever they want stuff, under the center console. So as you're riding in your car, pull on the door, pull on the center console, see if it's loose. Those are some of the common places that they had them. But like I said, it's not going to be spread out around the room. It's going to be in one safe location where they know where it is, so they know that it's always there and they can always go to it. They're going somewhere to find out how to do this. You don't just all of a sudden come up and say, I want to smoke marijuana, I'm going to know, and just know how to do it. Or I'm going to snort cheap heroin and know how to do it. So where do they find out about it? From their friends or the internet. There's all kinds of drug forums that you can look up on the internet that you'll see these kinds of postings where these first timers are going on there posting questions about how do I do this? What about this? Tell me about this. And they'll get advice from other users on how to do it. This is one called grasscity.com. And I don't know if you can read that in the back, but it says, I just recently started smoking weed about 6 months ago. It says, so my weed usually smells really strong. I smoke about 2 to 3 times a day. I'm always near or around my parents, and they never seem to notice, but I'm afraid I'll get caught. Where's the best place to hide my weed? They're asking these types of questions. Number one, my question is, how are you smoking 2 to 3 times a day around your parents and nobody's noticing anything? Secondly, they're asking for the best places to hide their weed. And these are the types of responses that you get. It says, cut a slit underneath your mattress and keep it there. For your parents to find that, they would have to be looking for something bad you're hiding. How many are you going to go check your kids' mattresses when you get home?
I'll
read it to them. Good. There's another one that says, if your parents don't often traffic your room, hang a sweater with pockets or a coat in your closet. Stash the booty in the pocket of your coat or sweater. That works for me because my parents aren't in my room as it is in the attic. And they do go up there. They never look in the closet. How many of you go in your kids' closets? You check the pockets that are closed? Really?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Good.
30 years law enforcement.
That's right.
That's right.
So when you're hanging your kids' clothes up, or you're if you don't hang them up, just go up there and take a load of laundry up there. Just say, hey, I just want to put your clothes up today. Just feel through the clothes. Check them out.
I just do a 6 month clean sweep.
Yeah.
Every 6 months it's gone.
The point is be engaged in your child's life. Observe what they're doing. Listen to what they're saying. Listen, look at their text messages. When I understand you want to give them some independence and want to trust them, but at the same time, my philosophy is trust but verify. When they go out, they say, I'm going over to Johnny's house. How many of them have iPhones? How many of you have the Find My iPhone app on their phones? Log in. Make sure they're going over to Johnny's house. Because if they aren't, I'm going to be asking some questions about why they didn't go to Johnny's house. Just be engaged in their lives. Listen to the way they talk. Smell them when they come home. See if they smell differently. Go in their rooms. You know, check through their stuff. All right? Listen to their music. Look up the lyrics of the songs they're listening to. Because all of that are indications and signs that you can use to determine if they've been exposed to it, if they're using it, if they are. It's either going to be one of two outcomes. Either I'm going to be dealing with them, or you're going to be calling May to come deal with them. And so, I know it's short and sweet, but hopefully these are some options and some tips that you can use to deal with your child before, because law enforcement historically doesn't make good parents. So we want you to be the good parents and be engaged in your child's life, so that hopefully you won't have to deal with this at some point in the future. I'll be around after May finishes. If you have any questions, feel free to stop by and ask me. I hope that was a little bit helpful. I just wanted it short and sweet before May came up and talk to you about what she's going to talk to you about.
May?
You should be on now.
Can you hear me back there? Hi. Thank you all for coming tonight. I'm sure you have better things you'd rather be doing than talking about drugs, but it's so great that you're here. I want to thank Christine and Dave for having me here, and for Michael. I work with law enforcement a lot over the years. You're one of the best informed officers I've ever heard speak, so that's really cool. I am a therapist by training. I am a licensed professional counselor and chemical dependency counselor. So for almost 30 years, that's what I've done. I've worked with people who use substances, mostly adolescents. They're my most favorite population to work with, and some adults. I've been a school counselor. You all mentioned your kids are in school, so I've been that school counselor who talks to the parents, talks to the kids, works with the DARE officers, all that kind of thing. I've also been outpatient and residential setting, so I've kind of seen people at all kind of stages of what's happened, and been in prevention where we try to prevent the problem before it happens. So I'm happy to answer any questions about any kind of continuum like that. Before I jump into that, though, I'd like to see if any questions have come up already based on what Michael said, that we can kind of make sure we're going to either answer a question or anything that hasn't been addressed that you want to make sure we address. Anybody have anything? Yes.
Are there still a lot of drugs that have candy-like names? I heard a presentation about a year ago, and an officer said Skittles was one that was popular. Are there more like that?
Skittles is popular. Ecstasy, like I said, has the term Molly. Just depends on, and a lot of it is driven by hip-hop and a lot of Hollywood, because they'll come up, they'll see it in a song, and then the kids will latch on to that, and they'll use that for the term drug they're using. But Skittles is also one of them.
You can go online. There's some good resources for kind of what names, what slang words are being used. Kids are really smart, though, and they come up with new ones every day. If we're sitting here, they're probably developing new ones. So you can't work too hard at memorizing all of them, because then they'll figure out new ones. But I think it's a matter of paying attention to what are they saying, asking them, what does that mean, and then going from there to do some more research. The kids are really, really smart, and they're very clever, and they have all day to figure this stuff out. So they're much smarter than we are, and they take the time to make sure that we don't know what they're talking about. So it's a full-time job of staying on top of it. The good news is there are great resources, and I've got at the end of my presentation some great places to go to for some of that information if and when you need it. Any other questions that have
to? If you can address at all some ways to communicate with your child when they confide in you that a friend is doing drugs?
Yes, that's a great one. Yes, absolutely, we'll get there. Yes.
No, my daughter is not
Yeah. I think probably a good time to worry would be now. Not that you're freaking out now, but you're being knowledgeable about it. So being here is a good step. My belief is that when they're walking and talking, we're talking about it, and we're educated, and we're paying attention to it. My son was probably 9 the first time he came home and said, hey, so-and-so's brother smokes marijuana. He's been hearing about that. He'd come to his presentation. That's how much my kids know. They're 12 and 9. So yet 9-year-olds are hearing stuff. They're seeing stuff. They know stuff. So it's absolutely a good time now, if you haven't started yet, to start. It's never too late. And it's never too early to start.
Not worried. Just educate.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Because you want to know, you want them to know that you're the resource, that you know more than they do, and you'll always be able to answer those questions. Absolutely. So we'll talk some about that as we go on to it, too. Anything else we want to make sure we get to? Okay, cool. So I wanted to say something about my qualifications as well. So I've been doing this work almost 30 years, done lots of presentations to families and kids, and Dave asked, we're going to have a puppet show. I actually do have a puppet show. It's called Forest Friends. We're kindergartners, and we talk about substances. So back in the day when I went to schools, we would make auditoriums with families, and we would use Forest Friends. So we really talk to kids from kindergarten on up about these kinds of issues. So I think it's never too late to start talking about these things. But more recently, there is a great, my last qualifications, I'm a Daring Way facilitator. Anybody here heard of Brene Brown before? She's one of Oprah's Soul Sunday kind of people. The Daring Way is a way to parent and be and live in the world that I think is kind of innovative. And I'll talk about some of those techniques today, because I think the best thing, as Michael said, we can do as parents is to know who we are and the kind of kid we want to be. They can never be more or better than we are. You know, we have to be willing to talk about this stuff and have these conversations and talk about this tough stuff. We want them to be able to overcome all the challenges and obstacles that they're going to be facing in the world they have today. And there's my contact information. If you need that, I'll be happy to share that with you as we end up. So being a parent, I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, as I said, and I think I remember the quote being said, becoming a parent is making the choice to have half of your heart live outside of your body, right? Talk about vulnerability. It is terrifying. So I think it's so brave if you all to come here and decide that I'm going to say I'm scared. I'm going to say I don't know what I'm doing with this. I don't know what's going to happen. Are they going to be exposed to substances? Yes. Am I going to know what to say? Maybe not, but I'll figure it out. It's a very scary place to navigate. But I believe that if we as parents come together and we nurture love and belonging and we have these conversations and we help kids cultivate wholeheartedness, which is what the Daring Way is, eventually kids will be able to do better as they navigate these waters. So I grew up in a family with 2 alcoholic parents. So I feel like I know what this looks like, and I know how to kind of come out of it the other side to not go down that path of addiction, because it is genetic. And if it's in your family, you're more likely to develop it, and so are your children. Sometimes it skips generations. Sometimes it skips a few generations. But genetically, if it's in your family, your kids are at higher risk if they do, or when they do, use a substance to become addicted. So you want to know that genetic history for yourself.
Yes, so that is our family right there.
Yes.
My dad, my husband's side, or ex-husband, and kind of a little bit in my side.
Yes.
So I've already communicated that to my kids already.
Great.
So a long time ago.
Great.
And I've showed them occasions where they can see it,
yes,
going on in the family.
Great.
And I pointed it out, and I said, girls, it just takes one time.
Absolutely.
And, you know, even to the point where if they see them eating a lot of sugar, because
mm-hmm.
sugar is kind of a form of alcohol, and I say, you know what, we need to be off of that for about a month
mm-hmm.
and see
mm-hmm.
if you're okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that's just one step leading to the next step.
Right. Absolutely. It's substance, it's behavioral, it's kind of things
yes.
that we're doing.
Yes.
Absolutely, it runs in families. And to say, well, you know, we have diabetes in our family, or we have heart disease, we have addiction in our family. It's great to talk about it. Hopefully doctors are asking those questions. Hopefully everyone's aware of that, because we know that today, and it's so great to have that conversation. That way kids know, if all my friends are doing it, they may not have it in their family.
Right.
Probably some do, but I know it's in mine. I'm at a greater risk if I take this substance.
The other thing that we do, because the food in today's world is just so processed and so bad,
mm-hmm.
is I basically have the law that says, if you can't tell me where it come from, where God made it from, we don't buy it. So
great.
There's no pop in the family, there's no junk food, there are no chips, none of that junk.
your mom has really good health choices.
Yeah, and I just tell them, you either have to have a protein, a carbohydrate, and a, you know, fruit.
Right.
We just, right. And they have to make one meal a week.
Right, that's really good. And that's a really good point. I think you don't necessarily sit down with your kindergartner or 9-year-old and talk about heroin and cheese and that kind of stuff. There's a developmental approach to this, right? Kindergarten through maybe second grade, we're talking about healthy decisions. Proper hygiene, proper exercise, proper eating, you know, kind of how do we take care of ourselves? Get into third through sixth grade, and it's more about responsibilities, making good decisions about kind of doing your homework and following a schedule, those kind of things. As you get into more middle school and intermediate school, now it's about kind of rules and boundaries, right? We're going to go to bed, we're going to wake up, we're going to do our homework. My son's playing the trumpet this year. I'm going to practice the trumpet at home. Kind of a scary sound. And then into high school, teenage years, and it's a very much more structured, right? Accountability, what are we doing, who are we with, how kind of stressors and pressures are coming with that. So developmentally, you're kind of moving along that path. And paying attention to each kid. Every kid is different, right? I feel like my two kids are so polar opposites that they're like parenting two different kind of where they come from. But it's personality, it's the way they're made up. My son, you look at him wrong, he's behaving well. My daughter has a lot more negotiation, a lot more threats, a lot more brides going on with her. Just the way they were built. So knowing who that personality is, you have to kind of tweak what you're doing as well. So in the daring way, it's all kind of about what you're saying, having the courage to kind of own your story. So my kids have known about my parents' alcoholism since we could talk about it. My mother died when my kids were young, so they never really met her, but we talk about her and how she progressed in her addiction to her dad. My father is still alive and still active in his addiction, and they've seen that once or twice now, and it's been really eye-opening for them. But it's a conversation we're having, the courage to speak about it, the courage to kind of own it. And the compassion for it. We don't call them bad names. We don't, you know, judge them. It's not critical. It is truly, this is a disease. It's a disease of the brain. We know now from science that addiction, drugs and alcohol change the brain. It's a brain process. It's not a choice. It's not a willpower issue. You know, pull up your bootstraps and stop it. Once that is triggered in the brain, you cannot stop with help, professional help and intervention. So that's why law enforcement, hopefully health professionals, doctors are all aware of that now. And we have much different interventions now for how we treat addiction. Connection is huge. We have to know other people kind of have similar struggles to us, whether it's kids or adults or families. So knowing who should our kids connect with, who are the safe adults in their lives, who can they talk to, what do they do if a friend of theirs is in trouble, and how do they come and talk about that? It's a huge piece of that. So in this daring way, what we do is we encourage you people to show up. You all showed up tonight. You're showing up at home with your kids and your kids' schools, their settings. Be seen. Kind of see who you are. This is what we believe in. It's a family value. Do we use substances? Do we not? Kind of asking yourself these hard questions. And then living brave. You know, as a parent, sometimes it's hard because other people, other parents are doing things that maybe you don't agree with. When you say you can't go to that person's house, you can't be around those things, or we don't allow that in our house, so you can't do these activities, it's a tough thing to kind of stand up for what you believe in. But it's so important that we do that. And I think around alcohol and other drugs, it's critical that our kids are very clear where we stand and what we're going to do if they wander from that path, because our job is to keep them well. So a little quiz for you. Let's see how much you know from Michael's talk or previously. Why do kids use substances?
Why to fit in.
To fit in.
I'm curious.
Curiosity, yeah, what's going to feel like? I see people doing it.
Escape.
Sure, right.
Friends.
What was that?
Friends.
The friends are doing it. They're fitting in, going along. Yeah, absolutely.
Their parents do it.
The parents do it. A lot of parents do drugs with their kids. Right?
Well, that was my generation.
Yeah.
I mean, we were the...
Sure.
Generation kids.
There's still something. My dad used drugs with my brother. Absolutely. And there's a lot of shame that can come up around that when people get well or the kids themselves. So it's something to deal with. Yeah. The reality is, because it works, right? Drugs feel good, right? Why do we eat certain foods or have wine with dinner? Because it feels good. Kids aren't dumb. They know it feels good. But it's to escape or stress or whatever it is, drugs work. They alter the brain. That's why kids use drugs. So it's important to acknowledge that. You know, back in the day, we did a lot of drugs are bad, drugs will kill you, just say no. Because what are you talking about? We have to acknowledge drugs will make you feel good. For a short time or for a little while, they will feel good. There's no reason we can't debate that. But what can happen? What other consequences can happen? So that's part of the conversation. You'll hear me talk a lot, I was so impressed with Michael, over the years, there's a lot of stigma around alcohol and drug use, right? People don't want to talk about it. This room is not 500 people. People see a talk on drugs, they go, ugh, I'm going to go there. I'm going to think of my kid or my family, right? People don't want to come to therapy or go to treatment because they think, uh-oh, that's a judge. I've done something wrong. I failed. It's going to go with me, my family. There's a huge stigma we have to fight with alcohol and drug use. So we as an industry are trying to change some of that. And there's a whole advocacy movement now. And we're trying to get away from terms like even substance abuse. You used to hear that. Because the choice is people don't choose to abuse substances. Once they use a substance and their brain has changed, of course they're going to abuse it. One of my colleagues says, I didn't abuse drugs, they abused me, right? They destroyed my brain. So we don't use the word abuse. We don't use things that kind of are judgmental, calling people addicts or junkies or things like that. We talk about them as human beings who have a brain disease or in long-term recovery, because recovery can happen and does happen all the time. So the language you'll hear, stigmatizing, judgmental, negative language around alcohol and drug use, and we hope to change that, because everyone is susceptible to it, and it happens to all people. Smart, rich, good people are susceptible to disease of addiction. So when did they start? How old are they?
Any age.
Any age? Any guesses when most people start?
High school.
High school?
Middle school.
Or middle school? Yeah. 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 Most people start around the age of 12, which is terrifying. My son is 12, right? But it was third grade, as I said, when he first came home and said, you know, so-and-so uses marijuana. My first instinct, I think, as a mom was like, oh my God, who is that family? Don't talk to that kid, don't go around, you know. Then luckily my years of experience are basically to take a step back and do what needs to be done for him. So it's like, well, what do you think is going on with him? Well, as Michael said, single mom, four or five kids in the house, not a lot of supervision. So I said, well, what's gonna happen? One day, this little boy's gonna come to school, and he's gonna say, hey, wanna come over? You wanna do this? I got some of that. What are you going to do? Right? We talk through what that could look like. So they start early. 12 is about the time they'll start with tobacco, right? Whether it's cigarettes or chewing tobacco or dip, whatever it's called. That's usually how most people follow a progression from tobacco to alcohol to marijuana to other drugs. Now, sometimes people mix it up. I've worked with people in treatment who have only used heroin and never smoked alcohol. Possible. It happens. But most do follow a path of progressively saying, let me try this. Oh, that wasn't so bad. That was kind of good. Their brain's being altered. They try the next progressive drug into more and more dangerous, more and more harmful substances. 14 is about the age where marijuana starts. And then 16 to 18 is where the pharmaceuticals, cocaine, heroin, those kind of things start to be used. What drugs did they use? I think you pretty much answered that question. Anybody hear other drugs that kids are using that we didn't mention?
The morphine, the, what do they call it? With the ball and the smoking. What the heck?
Crack?
No. Meth.
Oh, meth and amphetamine.
Yeah, sure.
One thing you didn't mention was inhalants. Kids huff certain substances. So whether it's the highlighter pens, you know, those kind of things, or certain chemicals. We want to make sure you're aware of that as well. That even starts sometimes before the tobacco, because they're household products, you have them in your home, they're easily to get around. What are the consequences of substance use?
Your life takes a turn for the worst.
Yeah. Usually not a good consequence, right? Some people go, like, I tried it, I didn't like it. Okay. 90% of people will probably use a substance at some point, right? Very few get through life without trying something. Anybody here never try a substance? Okay, it's quite better. Some people never do, absolutely. That's great. In prevention work, we used to always bring the recovering people to the stage, and they would share their story of horrible things that happened to them. Now we try to get away from that and say, because kids go, wow, you can go down that path, use all those drugs, and go to prison and kill people, and then it was pretty good today. right? We want our kids to see people who never use substances. We want our kids to say, wow, they never chose that path. I was at a breakfast in Dallas last week, and Chris Herrmann spoke. He's an NBA star, you know, and he talks about how we've got to ask kids, why do you have to be a different person on Friday and Saturday nights? What's wrong with you that you got to alter who you are and how you act? We've got to help kids feel good enough about themselves to not need to do that. That's the challenge. So consequences are, you'll probably continue on the path. School starts to suffer. Family stresses start to happen. Health consequences, right? Kids get sick. Legally, the cops come. You get arrested, you get charges. The minor in possession classes. I used to do those at my practice in Austin. And that's a great program. If kids get a ticket for tobacco or alcohol, they have to do this class. The problem is I had a kid there like 10 times. There's no progressive, like he needed to be in treatment. We finally got him in treatment. But our system doesn't exactly support intervention. It's more just like a slap on the wrist. But if you go to a class, the parents have to come, have to get involved, have to hear the same messages. The reality is the ultimate consequence is death. Alcohol and drugs kill every single day a lot of young people. A lot of adults die from substances every day. But it's really important to realize that it may be the first time they use a drug that can kill them. Or it could be the thousandth time. But alcohol and drugs absolutely kill people every day. So it is a chronic disease, which means once you have it, it doesn't go away. Once addiction alters the brain, you don't get to go back, right? It happens progressively. We know that, as Dave and Michael said, you as parents are the most powerful weapon we have against substance use. If you have these conversations, you say these things, and you can wait to at least try something until you're 21, your brain is developed. Our brain's developed until we're 21, 25, and then a little bit slower. You guys are like, late 20s, your brain is fully developed. That is the reality. That's why the drinking age is 21. Because at least your brain is mostly developed. The part of your brain, the myelin sheath, is there. So drugs can do less damage. So at least wait until you're 21. We don't have to tell kids never, but wait until you're 21. We know then your brain is fully developed. So I forgot where I was going with that, but I think it's really important that we talk about the consequences that this can happen. Which kids are at risk for using an addiction? Any kid, yeah. When I first started in this field, we used to give checklists. Should the kids at risk? Is the kids don't gotta worry about, And we realized every kid is at risk. It is the quarterback on the football team. It is your straight-A student. It is every single kid. There's no group of kids now that don't use substances. It is everywhere. It is in church youth groups. Sometimes they're the most robust alcohol and drug-using groups there are. So please be aware of that. That is not the only solution. You have to do the same thing. The kids who are good kids, they won't be exposed to these substances. So, there's a great new book out called Not My Kid. How to Raise a Drug-Free Kid by Joseph Califano. And he's, I think, 83 these days. And he runs CASA at Columbia University, which is the Addiction Sciences kind of association, doing research about kids and prevention. It's a great book. And these are the 10 things he says parents should do. And we'll talk about that conversation. And as Michael said, be there. Get involved in your kids' lives and activities. When they know that you're at, my son's friends call me the questioner. Because they know when they come to my house, what do? What do your parents do? What do you? If I don't know them already, where do you live? Do you have brothers and sisters? Last night we had some friends up from Houston for my son's football game, and I started on that kid. I've known this kid his whole life, and my son's like, she's not going to stop. Just keep answering her questions. What are you doing? Are you dating? Who are you dating? What's going on? What's her family like? We want to ask questions. We want to be involved and know what's going on with our kids. Open the lines of communication and keep them open. I love your question about what do you say if they say, my friends are using or my friends are trying that. That's a great sign that your kid's talking to you, right? They're saying, hey, so-and-so has got this going on. Maybe their parent got in trouble or their older sibling got in trouble. That's great. They're having that conversation with you. So later on, we're going to talk about how to have that conversation. But the bottom line is you started that open door conversation. That's a great place to start. Hopefully from there, they know, you know what you're talking about. You're going to let me ask these questions, and they're going to keep coming to you. That's a really great scenario. set a good example. This is a tough one parents will ask. Is it okay if I have a beer with pizza? Is it okay if I have wine when we have pasta? You know, there's a very real reality that when we show our kids sort of that zero, you know, drugs are bad, drugs will kill you, it can be an extreme. So I believe if you're going to use alcohol appropriately, it's in moderation and it's appropriate. I don't think kids should ever see parents intoxicated, unable to walk or talk or doing things that they would regret the next day. But in moderation, as an appropriate use of a legal substance for you of age of 21, that is your choice to do that. But I think it's a matter of kind of modeling that. Set rules and enforce them with consequences if children fail to follow them. So this is really important. Younger ages, the rules are different than when they get to high school. But as Michael said, by the time they get to middle school, high school, and they're more independent, they're at other people's houses without your, you know, knowing who they are maybe or what they're doing, being really clear what's expected. You know, with our kids, it started early as you can't watch these kind of movies at people's houses or you can't play these kind of video games. We had the biggest, I just felt like it must be awful being the child of a therapist because we must overanalyze everything. And my son was probably in second grade when he wanted to play a violent video game. What are those called? Death or war or war, whatever those things are, terribly violent. And he's like, can I please get this? Because so-and-so has it. He's a good kid, good family. Can we get this video game? Okay, well, gosh, okay, you're a good kid. You're doing well. He's a good kid. You know, gosh, it's been, for days and days we debated this whole thing. And in the end, I finally said, you know what? No. And here's why you can't. Because if I say yes to this, then next thing is going to be, can I do this? Can I go to so-and-so's house? And can I drink this? Can I use that? Can I smoke a cigarette? You know, if I give in now to something that I really feel is a family value, I feel like I'm going to always be willing to be moved. And I don't want to be moved. I've got to stand strong. So I know I'm really clear on that. But he was like, okay. Once I made the decision, when I was kind of waffling, he was kind of waffling, wait a minute, what's me going to do? What's mom going to do? What's going to happen? We have to be clear. And he was fine with it. He didn't really care about the video game. He was trying to see where I stood on this. So now we get more progressive into more challenging questions. Monitor their whereabouts. Certainly with iPhones these days, there's lots of good options of tracking them and knowing where they are. And I work with a family in Dallas who was very wealthy, and their son believed he had been shipped. And they probably have the means to do that. And he probably did have been shipped. But he really believed he had been shipped. His mom knew where he was at all times. It was fascinating. But people would call. He's over here. He's over there. He's doing this. They actually had a police officer come live on one of their guest houses on the property just to watch the kid. It was fascinating. So maintain family ritual such as eating dinner together. Research shows families who eat dinner together have kids less likely to use substances. Who knew? But the reality is it's that connection, it's being available. If you can't do dinner because you're running a million different directions, you know, have breakfast, have lunch, have Sunday brunch, whatever it is. Find time where you are connecting together and sharing those things. Incorporate religious and spiritual practices into family life. Again, it's those values. What do we stand for? What do we believe in? And what do we do if people cross that line? Really important that kids know what we stand for. Since I grew up in a home where we had very little family rituals because of my parents' addictions, very chaotic, with our kids it was like rituals, we're going to have ceremonies, and now it's like every day it's like a ceremony. Mom, it's Tuesday, we have to do this. You know, you go overboard with it. But I think it's important that people know, kids know, this is going to be part important to our family. Not important enough in the family for us to celebrate these things. Get dad engaged and keep him engaged. It's great to see so many dads here because sometimes, unfortunately, they're kind of moms who kind of run these things and do that. Dads are incredibly important for us, for families. And if it's a divorce situation or a step family or even single parenting, making sure that if it's not a dad in the home, there's lots of male role models around in our community. Find those people, bring them in, and help them be part of that. And then I think engage the larger community. You are the parents that are here. After there's thousands of people in this church, you're the, 50 people that came? You know, spread this message. Tell them what you hear, and then let them know there's resources out there. We need to make sure our schools are providing information, our churches, our PTAs, show it to your PTA, any kind of community home kind of groups. They're really important to do that. Any questions about those top 10 things? Yes?
Question. what the implications of those two paths are.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's solid research to know, but the professionals, and as Dr. Califano would say, the best thing to do is to have a conversation in your family about what we're doing and why we're doing it. So, you know, kids, when they start to hear the drug talks at school, you know, think if you smoke, you're drinking to die, right? So they get very black and white about it. So that's the time to start talking about why is it okay? Yes, if I'm going to have a beer with pizza, why is it okay? Number one, it's legal for me. My brain is fully developed, and I'm very careful about what I'm doing. You never see me have more than one or two. I never drive afterwards. You know, those are the concepts you're saying. This is how it fits in our family value. This is why it's okay. Families that have no substance use, because sometimes people like me who grew up in addicted homes will go the exact opposite, right? Never drink, never do anything. Those kids are so likely to use substances, and genetically, if we haven't talked about it, even more in danger. So we know that that doesn't insulate kids from it. So what's best is moderation, to say, this is what's okay, this is how we go about doing it. And I think it's about the modeling, you know, to say, I'm not going to have any more, certainly not going to see me under the influence doing things that are bad. But then again, you know, people can go to treatment, and hopefully go to treatment before it gets really bad. Before there's legal or other kind of consequences. And that's okay too. That can do a lot of good work to say, I go to treatment, I get help, and I come back in the family. That's a great, courageous thing to do. So even that's not a bad thing if someone chooses to go to treatment. Does that kind of answer your question? It'd be great if we had that research. It's not really there.
I was going to ask though, kind of along with that question, you know, kids are getting, they're using alcohol because they're getting it at home.
Oh, right.
And so that was kind of eye-opening. I don't know why I didn't make that connection sooner, but just to think, even if we do model it for them in moderation at home, they still have access to it.
Right. And that's the question. So do we, if we're going to do we do it at home or only out, maybe out to dinner or at an occasion? If we have it at home, how much? Do we have a full-stop bar? Or do we have a bottle that's put away and you know what's in there and you know no one else is getting to it? Or do you have a locked cabinet? You know, there's lots of options and choices, and I think depending on developmentally where your kids are at and what's going on with it, you're going to have different ways of intervening. And certainly if I had a young person who I knew had tried something, I would say, you know what, we're taking out of the house. I'm going to show you the one I never needed at home and never let you have access to it. So it's, I think it depends on your situation, how strict you get around that.
The thing about getting dads engaged, I mean, I think the whole family unit is just a disaster right now, and that's all the other problems we have. Dads are just not engaged. They're checking out. You know, pornography is at an all-time high, and they just, you know, if it's not working here, I'm just going to get a divorce, and I'm going to go find a 23-year-old and get remarried and start another life. At least that's my experience. So I've been trying to get, and I've been engaged in this church as well, where do I find, you know, role model dads that will come into the single mom homes that will meet with our kids and will set a good example? And I mean, I found maybe one or two, but I don't see any guys stepping up to that. And where do you go to get those resources or to get in touch with people like that? And I haven't seen it.
Really?
That's a huge, huge gap, a huge issue.
Well, the national program is Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
I've gone to that. Kind of scary.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
My experience was not positive with that. Yeah. So if that was too big of a thing or not a good experience, yeah. Some churches do have them. There may be some school counselors might have some resources of families that they know have kind of reached out to others. Some of those dad groups or parent groups in school settings. Anyone else know of any others?
I was going to say, I volunteered both in children and youth ministries within this church, so you might look at who small groups that your child has on Sunday morning or Wednesdays or Tuesday nights, and find out who the men are that are working with that, and get to know you know who it is that's volunteering with your kids in different activities.
Right. Did I end up back there?
Yeah. Well, I'm a high school teacher at public schools, and we have some kids that we adopt in. So if there's a troubled kid, they'll pair the kid with me to work with them during the year with his grades or what's going on in his life.
So maybe just ask those questions at school or at church. Hey, is there any other people with the same issue? Usually there is, and what can we do about it? And then you ask dad to step up, and dad tend to step up. Is there anyone here?
Like I said, there's a new group started last year called Trail Life USA, kind of like Boy Scouts, except it's more right Christian.
And Trail Life.
Trail Life, the same there. And, you know, it's a like Boy Scouts, so there's Christian men leading.
Is it for girls though?
There's also a girls
version. There's tons of boys. There's nothing for girls.
If you go to Trail Life USA, there's a girls version. I forget the name of it.
Okay.
But there's.
Because I saw Adventure Scouts, but Adventure Scouts is boys and girls.
Uh-huh.
I want something strictly focused with girls.
Yeah. And sometimes police departments have nice buddy kind of things going on.
There's a program called PALS.
PALS, uh-huh.
We partner with local YMCAs.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll schedule different activities, boxing or whatever, different activities where law enforcement will show up at certain locations and work with the YMCA and those leaders there.
There's a American Heritage Girls, I think, is a group that's kind of similar to Trail Life.
I think
that's the female version, is American Heritage Girls.
Okay, great, great resource. Heritage, yeah, they do great things. Okay, so the Search Institute is another research-based organization that says, how do we give kids the protective factors that we know? We know what the risk factors are, right? Drugs are available, drugs are out there, kids are getting them, kids are using them. And so the protective factors are, what do we do to insulate kids from that? And these are the 40 developmental assets. The ones on this side are internally or externally, what does the community need to do for kids? And then internally, support is there. That's the parents, it's other people, neighborhoods, schools, that kind of thing. Empowerment. A lot of times we talk about kids like, you know, they're not in the room or they're not very smart, you know. But really, you know, kids have a lot of good ideas, a lot of good skills that they can build onto, and have them. How do we find the kids in the school who aren't using? How do we make those kids the cool kids, right? How do we make the things they're doing different? When I was at the Chris Herron presentation, Clayton Kershaw was there. You've all heard him as a Dodgers pitcher. And our school principal in Salina, I used to coach him at Highland Park. So I said to him, how did you do this? How did you never go down? Because Chris Herron said to Clayton, you're my hero. You never used alcohol or drugs. I think you are amazing. So I said to Clayton, how did you do that? And he said, I don't know. He said, I had a group of 8 other guys and we didn't use substances. We just didn't. We just chose not to do that in our lives. Like, I'm not sure why, but we did. And we had a good time. We were the cool kids, but we never did that. And then he had a girlfriend who never used. And she and her friends together, they kind of formed this group that just didn't do the same things, didn't go to those parties, didn't have the same activities. That's what we want to do, is build those groups around our kids. Having boundaries and expectations. We think kids don't want that, right? And they're pretty good at making us think that they don't want the help and support. Leave me alone. I'm grown up. I don't need you. Got my business. You know, that kind of thing. The reality is, kids need to know that we are in charge. And I have walked into so many treatment centers for adolescents, and I've walked into some really bad ones where the kids are kind of running it, right? The inmates are running the asylum kind of thing. Because staff have felt like, well, they're not listening to us. They're not going to follow directions. And I step in, I'm like, whoa, okay, wait, we got to get some control here. And it's fascinating because they'll push back. I've been called every name in the book. I've been, you know, it's going to happen. But kids know they are not qualified to be in charge. Deep down, they know that. And they look to us as adults to show them, I love you enough to have boundaries. I love you enough to tell you no. And I have kids from 15 years ago that I ran a program for who now found me on Facebook. 15 years ago. I can't tell you someone's name I met 15 minutes ago. But 15 years ago, these kids remember me as their therapist in a program, because I was very clear about expectations and what's going to happen. And they're thanking me. I'm a lawyer in D.C. now. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. Thank you for what you did for me. They want and need those boundaries. And for us to have high expectations for them, I always tell kids, I know you can do better. I know this can be your outcome. No matter what can happen, you've got to be able to believe that in them. Having constructive use of time, we want our kids to be able to have positive things going on in their lives, sports, youth program, that kind of thing. I mean, they won't use substances at those places and those things, but you have to know they're involved and they're staying productive. But not overscheduled. Tend to overschedule our kids these days, you know. In the daring way, we talk about our culture, kind of a culture of scarcity. You know, feel like it's never good enough. We want to have the nicest house and the nicest car and this or that. And we kind of build our lives around this sort of
believe that we have to look or be a certain way, and it's the goal is to be more authentic about who we are and what we're doing. And sometimes it's sort of a being busy or being exhausted is somehow seen as prestigious and positive. So we've got to slow down a little bit, focus our time, don't overschedule our kids, and it's okay to just have some downtime. Commitment to learning. You know, how can kids feel like I'm going to find out who I want to be? I'm going to go to college, a trade school, the military. There's lots of options out there, and they're all good options, and helping kids to figure that out. Having a connection to school and the people at the school and their future goals is critical in avoiding what, you know, you tell a kid, I've said to lots of kids, you know what, lots of kids use alcohol and other drugs. You have more to lose than they do because they don't have that college scholarship. They don't have this or that. You've got to be clear that this is not okay for you. And then believing that it's just not an option for them to do that. Positive values. I think when kids feel good about themselves, they're less likely to damage themselves when they understand the damage to the brain and the body and their life and to their parents. The biggest reason kids use for not using drugs, you know what it is? What's the number one thing they say? The reason I didn't do it. I didn't want to disappoint my parents. They do not want to let you down when they know it's important to you. If they think, well, they don't mind if I use alcohol or a little bit of marijuana is okay. But if they know this is a clear line, that's the biggest reason they will not use. They don't want to disappoint you. So make it very clear what would be disappointing to you. Other big question that kind of made me think about that. We grew up in generations where maybe some of you didn't use substances, some of us did use substances. And the question is, what do we tell our kids about that? You know, did you do marijuana? Did you ever try this? Did you ever do that? Kids will start asking that question if they haven't already. And parents struggle with, how do I answer that question? What do I say? What do I do? And I think, it varies with each person. It varies with what your kid is at. What you don't want to do is, you know, war stories. Oh, I got so drunk this one time. Oh, I did this or I did that. Whatever you do, don't make it sound cool. Don't make it sound like it was a good thing. If it's a learning experience, I did this. I wish I hadn't. If I knew now what I know now, I would never have done that. That can be very powerful. But you don't have to give them details. You don't have to tell them things that make it sound more exciting, again, because that curiosity gets piqued. And school competencies, feeling like they have a future again and that they can negotiate things. If a kid has a friend who's using and they're talking about that, they're not feeling that pressure, that's a good thing. So how do you help them navigate those conversations? One technique that I love, and I do this all the time with the families I work with, have family meetings. And there's two reasons for this. One is, you're instilling all of those skills that we talked about, communication skills, negotiation skills, refusal skills. Have a weekly family meeting, ideally, if not once a month is even good, but a time where you all come together, you start it out with praise. Hey, great job this week, you got your homework done. Hey, you cleaned up your room. Didn't have a positive drug test. So we should be drug testing our kids if we have any concerns. Hey, no positive drug test, good job. Whatever it is, praise is going around. Each person is praising the other person in the family. Gotta have that positive, safe thing going on. Again, the expectations. This week, this month, what have we got going on? You're gonna get your homework done, or there's gonna be this consequence. We're gonna accomplish these goals together. You're setting the expectations for the family, how we're all gonna work together to accomplish it. There's always an agenda at a family meeting, and it includes these things. The kids each have a time, and three-year-olds can do this. Three-year-olds can do a family meeting, and they have a part in it, where they can say, I want to do this, I want to talk about that. And it's a great thing to talk about the family calendar. What's going on in our lives? Are we too busy? Are we overscheduled? Or are we not paying any attention to Joey, because we're so focused on these two kids? Now, what's going on? Is the balance there? Talk about that as family meetings. And then earnings. I'm a big believer. I mentioned bribery earlier. But the reality is, we don't go to work for free. We don't do a job for nothing. Kids sometimes need to earn some things, right? Whether it's time to watch TV or to buy candy, the Halloween candy that we're all eating now, right? So give them earnings. What are they working towards? What are kind of their goal at the end of the week or the month or whatever it might be? So use peace in the family. It will build all of these skills, all these resiliencies around your kids. This is hard to see, but I'm happy to tell you it's from NIDA, which is the National Institute of Drug Abuse. There's a lot of stuff on the internet that's not accurate, so at the end of my presentation, I've got the good websites to go to for accurate information.
especially telling young people that, you know, they learn most of their drug information from their friends or from the internet, and that's not always the most accurate. So it's really important to help them understand where is reliable information going to be. Probably not from the friends who are using, and it's probably not from certain websites. And the biggest problem with marijuana is, a lot of people say, well, you know, people in this room may have used marijuana when they were younger. The reality is marijuana of today is not the same marijuana that we may have used. It is 60, 70, 80 times more potent. It's stronger. It's different. It's laced, usually, with heroin, with meth, whatever it is. It is not the same drug that we may have used. So it is not okay for kids to use marijuana, or anybody to use marijuana. But there's this whole lifestyle around marijuana, right? Most people know heroin's bad. I shouldn't do heroin. But marijuana is talked about in songs, in TV, in movies. There's websites, there's a magazine, High Time magazine. There's celebrity endorsement for it. I mean, it is everywhere. So it's really important that we be aware of that. And marijuana is... And if it, well, that's the whole legalization thing really confuses people, because kids are like, well, it's legal, it must be okay. So it's an amazing thing to talk about and have that conversation around. But it's a very, very dangerous drug. It's very addictive. So family checkups is what we've been talking about. Communication, encouragement, negotiation, setting limits, supervision, and knowing your child and their friends. That's what we've been saying. Those are the things that NIDA, the federal government, says we need to do. And check off, are we doing this? Are we communicating well? When you start to see signs of substance use, some of these things tend to go away, right? You know, I don't want to look at them, I don't want to talk to them, you discuss it in them. It becomes more difficult when they start to go down a path. So that's where it's important to reach out for help, ask other parents, ask other people who are involved in their lives. This is what Michael already talked about. I think with substance use, you can look at certain drugs and certain side effects. The biggest side effect or symptom to look for, to me, is change. When you know your kid, you know how they act, how they walk, how they talk, what they're doing, their interests, and you see a shift in that, that's the time to be concerned. Are they not doing the same things they used to? They want to quit activities? Is it a new group of friends? Any kind of change or shift in who they are as a person, that's a sign to something to look for. Never mind the actual physical signs of substances. And I always talk about, there's four times in the day that I think you can make or break this with kids. When they wake up in the morning, are they waking up to a loving, nurturing, hey, how's it going kind of thing? Or is it, yeah, I get up, we're late, you know, is it chaotic? When they leave the house, they leave with a love hug and a kiss and have a great day, do a good job today. When they come home and when they go to bed, I love building in that ritual that is always a hug and a kiss at those four seconds in a day. Because then when they get to be older, it's not unusual when they come home to give them a kiss. And then you're smelling, you're looking, right? It's normal, but I'm checking out now what you're doing. Absolutely. So use those four times now when they're younger, and then as they get older, you're there. It's part of your interaction in the family way, but you're paying attention to those things as well. So prevention, drug-free, it's the same things here. Early and often is when you talk about it. Teach by your own example. Urge them to be active. When people care about how they feel, how they look, because the reality is, there's some great websites to go to about the dangers of drugs and how you can go from looking really good one day, a year later, you can look very much older, damage to your face, things can happen. Drugs damage every organ. There's one part of the body drugs do not damage. You know what it is? One part, your earlobe. It's the only part of the body that will not be changed from drug use. So unless you've got really ugly earlobes already, everything else is going to change. So show kids, adolescents especially, are very vain. They care about how they look. They will look older and uglier if they use drugs. That is the reality.
Faces of Meth.
Faces of Meth. That's a great website. It really shows the damage that can be done.
Did that. My kids and I were all in the bed one Sunday. Sometimes we do that.
Right.
And I said, what's up, what's going on? And they happened to bring that up. And she says, Mom, you got to see this website.
Yeah.
And my daughter brought it up. And I said, see, that's what will happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Those great teachable moments where you can use the news or something happen. There was a Facebook post going around this past week of an 18-year-old boy, 18 or 20, was 20 years old, who died from heroin. And his father put a picture of him on Facebook, and it's kind of like disturbing to look at, but it's the reality of he used, and now he's dead. And kids do die every day from this. there's a great website or Facebook page that I'm on called the Addict's Mom. My kids hate it. Like, Mom, you're not an Addict's Mom. I'm like, I know, and I'm just making sure. But every day there's kids dying. Every day a mother says, my son died last night. My son overdid last night. My daughter. I mean, it is every single, it's heartbreaking. There's some ways I can't even look at it because it's so heartbreaking. But there's 10,000 mothers on that page right now. It has grown tremendously. And the epidemic of deaths is just amazing. But we can prevent it and we can do things about it. If you see signs your kids are using, I urge you to be calm. Because, of course, you're going to intervene. I work with an interventionist named Debbie Canals. Her son was the first intervention ever done on TV. If you watch, go to Dr. Phil, Brandon, and Debbie Canals. And she and I are going to do some work together to start doing adolescent interventions, because if we can catch them sooner, that might be good. And we're going to start a program called VIP House Calls, where we can go into homes and help families when these signs are coming. Control your thoughts and actions. Of course you're going to be emotional, of course you're going to be upset, but to tap into that, I know what to do, I know what's happening. Assess and decide the best time to intervene. If you smell something when they come home, you don't want to right then and say, oh my gosh, have you been drinking? What is going on, right? Wait till you're calm. Wait till they're sober. Wait till the substance is not in their body anymore. You get a very different reaction to that. There was a story on the Addict's Mom this past week. This mother was trying to intervene with her son by herself. Ended up murdering her. He choked her to death, and she died. She used to be on this page and pretty active, and you always saw her comments. People on drugs don't act rationally, and her son ended up murdering her because she was in a prevent treatment. So you have to know when to get help. Call other people. There are people that can come into your home and help you if you have to intervene. Leave the situation. Call the police. Police are really helpful. Sometimes we don't want to get our kids in trouble. I don't want to call on them. I don't want to press charges. Sometimes the best thing to do. Get in the legal system is a good thing to do. It's not a bad thing to do, and our own kind of shame or embarrassment around that keeps us from doing it, but it's not a bad thing. But if you do believe if a person is using, within 24 hours you've got to do something. Because they could obviously get hurt from it, or they could hurt someone else if they're using. So within 24 hours, call for help. Ask people that you trust who can help you. And this is just, do you have that handout, Christina? Okay, I've got a little handout for you. Because I think it's really important to talk about what is your plan as a family to avoid substance use. Being consistent in the modeling, communicating, educating, being honest. If the kids ask you about substance that you don't know, say, I don't know, but let's look it up. Let's call someone who knows to answer these questions. Pharmaceuticals are the biggest abused drugs. So if you have medications from past surgeries or whatever, lock them up or get rid of them. Do not keep hydrocodone and codeine and all these drugs in your home. Get rid of them. Either flush them, or there's a disposal site. You go to police officers and just take them there. Don't keep medication like in your home. That's where kids are getting them from. Your grandma's, aunts and uncles' medicine cabinet. So don't keep them. There's a whole project called the Medicine Abuse Project for the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids, and they tell you kind of what to do and how to take care of those things. Monitor internet use, check what they're doing, check their bags, we talked about that. And do drug tests. You can buy a drug test at CVS for $20. You know, start it now, start it early, let them know you're going to be testing, and you can do that. It's not a bad thing to do that. And kids will tell you it's a great thing to be able to say, I can't. I'd like to smoke that marijuana with you, you know, Bobby, but I can't have my parents test me. Let you be the bad guy, and they won't do the, it's amazing. If they can blame you, it's not them not being cool, it's you as a horrible mom. Be the bad guy. So I'm going to test you, and then they won't do it. It's great. Kids are easy that way. So here are the resources. Partnership for Drug-Free Kids. I'm going to pass this around. This is to go home tonight and make a contract with your kid that says, we are not using substances. And here's what we're going to do about it. And the kids are going to agree to not use, to not drive under the influence, not get in a car with someone else who's using. If they feel unsafe or uncomfortable, they'll let you know. They'll be honest, accountable. And you, as a parent, make the promise to be available to them, to help them, keep an open mind and listen, to not overreact or judge them if they come to you and tell you, hey, something's going on here. And you agree to work together to honor our promises. Did you mind passing on that? But that's a great website, drugfree.org, and their phone number is 855-DRUG-FREE. Any questions, concerns, you can do that. Not My Kid, another great organization that has parent tips and toolkits and things like that. CADCA is a coalition site for community coalitions. CASA is Dr. Califano's thing. any kind of mad or sad groups are really good. And here locally we have WTF, which stands for Winning the Fight. It's a Winning the Fight. Yeah, the other WTF. The mother actually did that because her son died from a drug overdose. And so he would always have that in his text, so she used that terminology. But she's writing Flower Mound. She has amazing display for churches or schools where they have billboards of kids who have died from alcohol drugs. They bring it to schools and to assemblies and things. It's very powerful. So WTF is a great website, Facebook page, and option. SAMHSA is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the federal government. You can go there to find treatment. Every treatment center in the United States is there. Look for treatment by lessons, for adults, for anyone who needs treatment. And that's it. Oh, anyone with a Daring Way comment? The Daring Way has a whole program about parenting wholeheartedly. So it's all about the wholehearted parenting manifesto, which is basically what we talked about. I'm going to be present for my kids. I'm going to show up. I'm going to have the courage to be there and face these difficult situations. Having rest and play with your kids, compassion and boundaries and joy and gratitude, modeling again, how do you feel? How do you deal with difficult things that come up in your life? And you're going to truly, daringly see you. Honor your kids for who they are. They're going to be different. They're not all the same. We as parents are not perfect. We're going to make mistakes. And as you navigate these waters, to do it in a loving and daring way. Thank you all for your time. Sorry to keep you over, but thank you for your time. Can we answer any more questions? Or?
Yeah, we have until quarter after.
Any other questions? Yes.
Other than from friends or family, where are teenagers getting the illegal drugs? Especially in this area, Carroll, Plain, and Frisco. Are there particular places that you know drug dealers frequent and they're going there? Is a lot of this done on the internet?
Your friends are dealing.
Internationally.
A lot of it comes out of South America. Cartels run it up.
No. I mean locally.
Well, I understand that, but their friends.
You want an address? Go to their house.
Are there partners? You know that there's dealers out every Friday night.
Absolutely. You drive to South Dallas and people walk through the street.
But here.
You can see Carrollton.
Frisco.
Yeah.
It's young adults.
I don't know. I don't spend the majority of my time in Frisco working in law.
There's a place. If you want to know, it's right that the community that's, I'm trying to think, right by the Walmart that's right there, the Walmart that the new one that's put in, take that street straight. There's a complex of apartments. That's a big drug dealer area. If you go just past that on the right-hand side, there's another area that's a big drug dealer area.
Does a lot of this happen on the internet? Is there like a Craigslist of drug deals that they're setting up?
You'd be surprised how many marijuana is actually shipped through the Federal Express, UPS. They'll have it sent packaged and packaged sealed packages.
Can I ask?
But what I want to encourage you to do is pay attention to your neighborhood. Because if you see a house where there's a lot of activity, people walking in and out, cars pulling up for 2 seconds, somebody running up the house and leaving, call the police department. Because I guarantee you, they're selling drugs out of that house. If there's a lot of activity, especially late in the evening, middle of the night, I mean, you'll see it. I mean, call the police department and say, hey, I think there's a lot of activity going on in this house. Can y'all check this out?
So you may have said it and I missed it, but going back to the question about when your kid approaches you and says, hey, my friend so-and-so is using drugs, okay, what do I say to that? How do I respond?
Well, I would first say thank you for telling me. I would give them all the praise and compliments in the world. Thank you for telling me. I'm so glad you told me this. Not do what I almost did, was like freak out and want to go to that parent's house. Just thank them for telling you. This is really good. And then I would ask him, how do you know? What are you seeing? What's going on? Is he approaching you? What's going on? You know, what's it look like? And then I would say, well, what do you want to do about it? Right? Like, what do you want to do? Do you want to just talk about it? Do you want me to call his mom? Do you want me to go over there? I get their opinion of what they want to do. Does he just want to get off his chest, or does he want to have some tools in his toolbox to go and say this, or that? And then I think lastly, I would close with, this worries me. Now I'm scared, right? Because you know he's doing it, you know he has access to it. Like I said to my son, he's probably going to offer it to you. You know, do you have an interest in joining? Have you thought about it? You know, that can be opening up a conversation to say, oh, if I knew my friends were doing it and they're saying how great it is and how cool it is, it might make you want to do it. Have you thought about wanting to do it? I mean, put it out there. That's not going to make them want to use, right? It's going to make them go, that person's smart. He's asking about this, you know. You can say, I predict that you might be feeling this way. Or say, you know, when I've had this temptation to, in my own personal life, and so there was this going on or that going on, you're, again, modeling how to deal with those kind of triggers in those tough situations. But then I think I would say, if he's putting you in danger, I'm going to take action. I am not afraid to call that parent and say, hey, this is what's going on. A lot of times as parents, we don't want to be the one to say, hey, you're having a... I've had parents throw a keg party for kids completing treatment. I'm like, did I miss something? Did I not do a good job? I mean, it's amazing how parents can be convinced that it's just alcohol. I mean, parents throw parties all the time. I'll be there, I'll watch it. Yes, I think it's well-intentioned. Oh, they'll drink at our house, we'll supervise it. A lot of times parents will use thinking, well, they're using with me, so that at least I know it's safe. If they're using with you, they're using outside of your home. I can guarantee you're not their best drug-using friend. It's just not going to happen. So it's really important that we realize, help empower parents to say no. It's never an option to give our kids alcohol or the drugs, no matter how old they are, until they're at least 21. So I think it's a matter of kind of open, and then I think it's okay to say, gosh, this really freaks me out. I'd like us to get some fresh help. You know, call me, call someone else in, bring in that community bandwagon of people to say, this worries me. We had in Salina, was it just last year, where we had a whole football team got involved in some alcohol and drug use. So, you know, me being an annoying parent, I sent an email to the superintendent and the principal and said, hey, what are you guys doing about this? This is huge. Heard nothing. Nothing back. So it's unfortunate that we as parents and communities cannot get them to do more, because it's truly happening in our school. Most drug deals happen at school.